I am talking to Glenn Hansard, and Glenn has been in the entertainment industry for a long time. You may recall back in the Commitments, the fine red-headed guitarist who was vibrant and everything. Well, that was Glenn Hansard, but Glenn Hansard is now the lead actor in a movie that's taking North America called Once. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour, Glenn.
Thanks very much. Nice to be here.
And as I said there, you know, you've had a movie career going back to... The Commitments would have been your first movie, was it?
It was, yeah. It was. Well, actually, I was busking on the street at the time, which is kind of ironic in that, I was busking on the street and they came up to me and they asked me, you know, a casting agent said, you look like someone we might want to audition. You know, you've got red hair. We're looking for a red-haired guitar player from the north side of Dublin. and I sort of fit the bill. And so I went and I did an audition, and I remember meeting Alan Parker, and, you know, it was very exciting to sort of be offered to act in a film. I thought it was very exciting and just sort of rolled along with it.
Right.
And I got the part, and I really enjoyed it. And ironically, my character in the movie, in The Commitments, my character at the end of the film, when you see like what they're all doing now, my character was busking on Grafton Street. And I remember Parker thinking that was funny, because that's actually what I really did.
That's
kind of ironic. That's ironic that my character starts with, you know, it's like 15 years later, the Once character starts on Grafton Street.
That's right. That's right. It is ironic in every respect, because the whole story of Once then revolves around a busker. Once. Where did Once come from?
Well, Once is the result of an idea John Carney had. Now, John Carney is an old friend of mine. He used to play bass in The Frames,
right,
in my band for a couple of years in the beginning. And we've talked for a long time about the possibilities of doing something together. I mean, basically, John left The Frames to go make films. That was something he really needed to do. And I remember during my Commitments experience, I went and I bought him an 8mm camera and a clapperboard. I remember, because we were in this sort of environment where you could get those things, and I bought him and I said, right, now leave my band and go make your films. And he sort of went off and he made films for years. And recently, like about maybe 2 years ago, he came to me and he said, look, I've got this idea, you know, I've got a 16-page outline of a story about a busker whose girlfriend's gone to live in England, and he meets this new girl, and she's an immigrant, and I'm very much going for a sort of a modern multicultural Dublin, because nobody's really addressed it. And basically, these are two people who the Celtic Tiger has kind of missed, if you like. And I loved the idea of the story. I loved the political aspect of it, which was very subtle. But, he basically wanted me to write him the songs and basically give him some anecdotal, because I was a busker for years, to give him some anecdotal stories, which I did, and he added them into the film. But at this time, Cillian Murphy was going to be playing the main role, and I wasn't involved. I was only involved as a songwriter and guest consultant. And so we rolled along with it, and John's idea fleshed out a bit. I told him some stories, you know, for instance, the guy getting his getting his money stolen. There was a guy who used to steal my money on a very regular basis, and I'd see him coming, and I knew, you know, I just knew certain days he looked really strung out, and he really needed to, you know, to take. The thing is, if you're so down that you need to rob from a busker, then you're in a desperate place.
That's right.
And this guy would come and steal my money every so often. So anyway, just to make a long story short, Cillian Murphy ended up pulling out right before we started shooting the film, and John was spent a couple of days basically not knowing what to do, whether he was going to collapse the project or whatever. And so he came and he said at the last minute, he said, you know what, we don't need money to do this. We can do this in a very, very different way. So we ended up shooting Once in 17 days, and we did it for €120,000.
Fantastic.
And that's kind of how it all came about.
And of course, the response, it opened in Ireland, was it in March?
In March, yeah.
And what was the response?
Well, I have to say that the response was quite typical of an Irish audience when it comes to Irish film. They didn't really go see it.
Right.
You know, it did okay. And it was mainly people who liked my band who went to see it. And again, it didn't get a big release. I mean, there wasn't much press behind it. They didn't spend any money on advertising. So the film came out, and I think it had a very very modest run in the cinema, which was kind of, you know, which didn't surprise us in any way. What really surprised us is what happened later.
Yeah, well, of course, once it hit North America.
Yeah, it was incredible.
I know. It was somebody that we both know was telling me about it when I was down in New Orleans. And I came back to Ottawa for and I caught it back in June. And I ended up back down in New Orleans the next week and was able to share stories and trade stories with Anne Brio. Sherry's,
oh, right, okay.
Sherry's mom.
Sherry's mother, yeah.
Yeah, I know Anne quite well. And I must say, when I got here and I saw the movie, I was thrilled with it. It's fantastic. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie. And the response here, there was a tremendous response in Ottawa from the point of view of attendance at the cinema.
So, it's incredible. It's just been amazing.
So the tour now that you guys are on, and I know it's pretty hectic that you've been traversing the U.S. and working your way down. You're down the south at the moment. What has the response been like on the tour?
It's been incredible. It's been very unusual in that I guess in a way it's kind of for the audience it's a little bit different than a normal gig in that they went to see this movie. You know, this couple in the end kind of go their separate ways, which we felt was very important in the film, that the two characters go their separate ways and that they never really get together. And yet people are coming to see the gig and here's the two characters actually together and playing music and almost living, it's almost like living out the sequel or something. It's very unusual. People have been really responsive to it, and it's almost like they're coming to see, it's weird, it's almost like not like a rock gig, it's more like people are coming to see two actors.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of unusual, but it's been really great. You know, we've been really, really enjoying it. And it's a lot older audience as well than my band, which I'm really enjoying, because I always feel that an older audience will, they'll make up their mind slowly and they'll decide, and once they decide they'll stay with you, and that's been really great. I mean, I've really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Well, of course the music in Once is very, very embracing, as a composer for that, like it's so engaging, and we're going when we finish up here, we'll be playing some of the music. I have played some of the tunes over the last few weeks, and it really is beautiful music. For the compositions, did you work alone or did you have collaborate on any of those?
I collaborated on a few of them with with Marquetta, the actor, the main actress in the film.
And she has a beautiful voice.
What's that?
She has a beautiful voice.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's a wonderful player. She's a great songwriter and a great person to just collaborate with. You know, very, very easy company, you know, has great ideas. And we just, you know, I worked on a lot of them on my own. And then a few of them, myself and Mara sat down with and we wrote. And then she wrote a few herself.
Right.
So basically it was just the two of us pretty much all the way, I guess.
How, and I take it Marquetta is an immigrant to Ireland, how has she found the experience?
Well, it was interesting because when she first was coming, she first came to visit Dublin, one of the things that really sort of shocked her was how long it took her to get through passport control every time she, you know, because, you know, she's not coming over here to work, she was just coming over to visit. Over to Ireland to visit, and she said she just had to spend so long, and they would give her like a piece of paper saying you can stay in the country for, you know, 12 days. And for me, it was quite shocking. I was like, man, this is Ireland. I mean, this is not, because, you know, we all kind of grumble about, you know, we grumble about the about having to, you know, going to the American embassy every year to get our visas, and it's almost like sometimes you sort of feel like, oh my God, I mean, why are you making it so difficult for people to get into your country? I mean, it's just so, it almost makes you not want to go. You know, it's almost like just kind of, you know, prove to me that you're not going to stay. You know, it's like, and yeah, sometimes you almost feel like, well, you know, I don't really want to go that much.
You know,
so it was kind of, it was difficult for her. And when she came over, you know, even for instance, when she was selling the flowers on Grafton Street, she was just acting with the flower ladies on Grafton Street. The actual flower ladies on Grafton Street were quite aggressive towards her.
Right.
And they were like, you know, they were saying stuff like, you know, we don't want any bozzies over here.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, Bosnies meaning Bosnians, which were which were one of the first groups to of immigrants into Ireland.
I should tell you, Glenn, that the station that we're going out on, the Gaelic Hour, it's a multicultural radio station.
Yeah.
And all different, we have something like 26 different cultures that broadcast through here. And the great thing about Canada is that, you know, it's very much embraces and has evolved into an immigrant country where we all work very much together.
That's great.
Like the program that comes after me is a Haitian program, and there's a we have Bosnian here and we have German, everything. But it's a fantastic, and I know that the changing face in Ireland, when I was home recently, it becomes very apparent that immigration is having a major effect on Ireland.
Yeah, sure is.
Particularly like when we were travelling and we were around some of the hotels, it was in the service industry particularly, there seems to be quite a lot of immigrants.
Yeah, it's a lot of Polish people now living in Ireland. My brother runs a construction company and it's pretty much all of his employees are Polish.
So,
which, you know, he's kind of enjoying, you know, but it's very, very interesting what's happening in Ireland. I mean, we've even got a Polish newspaper now in Ireland. And when I was growing up, Ireland was just a white Catholic country.
That's right.
You know, I remember there was a black kid came to our school when we were kids, and it was really unusual. I remember going up and touching his hair and it being really unusual.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And now it just seems like there's been so much change.
So how
so fast. And you know, it's funny because it's always the working class that have to deal with it. You know, in any country, it's always the working class that always deal with immigration first.
Right.
Because, you know, the middle classes can sit around and write in their newspapers and go on about it from a distance and talk about the economic end of things. But actually, it's the working class that always end up having to share their community, if you like.
So,
it seemed to me like even when we were making once, you know, it was something. I was really, really happy with the subtlety of the political statement we were making,
yeah.
Which was just that, you know, nobody had addressed the fact that Ireland's becoming more multicultural in film, and since once there's been a few who have done it now, and I think it's really, really important because you can't ignore these things.
So how is that having an impact on the entertainment industry? Like, so when you go out and you're doing a gig, or you do something like you've done in the form of once, is the entertainment industry taking into account that there's a large audience out there now that is not Irish?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I haven't noticed it, to be honest with you. I mean, at Frames gigs, like still when we play in Dublin, it's still mostly Irish people who come to see us. And we, you know, what we started to do about a year and a half ago was when we were advertising our gigs. You know, we'd put it in Polish also, or put it in Chinese, or just not only because we wanted to basically open up the sort of doors to other cultures, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to see it, and some bands are doing it now where when they advertise for a gig, they'll put it in a few different languages, you know, not just English,
right.
Which I think is very open approach, and very realistic and very fair, because, you know, you've got a lot of people living in Ireland who don't speak English.
That's
like
right.
An awful lot.
Yeah. So while you guys, I know you're on your way to Atlanta, you're working your way up here towards Canada, and I understand you will be in Montreal, is it on the 22nd?
That's right, yeah.
And then you're down Toronto, I think, on the 23rd.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of your only touchdown in Canada.
We missed out on Vancouver this time.
Right.
We were going to go to Vancouver, and but the next time we come over, hopefully we can do, because there was one tour we did maybe 2 years ago where we did like Edmonton and we did Quebec City, and it was lovely. We went right across the country, had a great time.
And how do the Canadian audiences respond to you?
I really like, especially Montreal. I really like the audience that comes to see our shows. I don't know what it's going to be like for myself and Marquetta, because obviously it'll be a slightly different audience. There'll be more people who've seen the film. But in terms of the Frames, we've got a great audience in both Toronto and Montreal, and I really like them. It's something very, very. It's really nice to get out of America. You know, not that it's, you know, it's draining or that it's not a great country, but just it's just really nice to get into a place where, you know, where French is spoken, and just you can feel, you know, you feel a bit more European. I mean, New York feels very European to me, and I really always enjoy being there. But I also love being in Montreal.
Right. Right.
For the same reason.
Of the gigs that you've done so far on this tour, where would you say was the outstanding one so far that you felt that?
Well, so far the best gig we've had on this tour, I guess, would probably be Los Angeles, which is unusual for us again because, you know, in terms of the Frames, Los Angeles was always one of those cities that we struggled with. But I guess because it's a movie town, we went there, myself and Marquetta, and we played in a place called the Wiltern, which is like 3,000 people.
Right.
It was, you know, it's been sold out, you know, the longest, and the expectation was incredible, and, you know, so I guess Los Angeles has become a new central place for us, which is fantastic.
Good, good. Well, Glenn, I've taken enough of your time. And I'm not too sure if I can make it down to Toronto, to Montreal on the 22nd. It's on my schedule and something as a try to do.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful I can. But I do appreciate you taking the time out of your hectic schedule and spending a few minutes with the listeners on the Gaelic Hour here in Ottawa.
Not at all. It's actually enjoyable to talk about something that isn't, you know, my favourite colour. It's nice to talk about Ireland.
By the way, do you still have the boa?
I do.
The one that you exchanged for your tie.
That's right, I do. I remember at the wedding, she gave me a boa and I gave her my tie.
Yeah, well, I understand your tie escaped Hurricane Katrina.
Really?
Yes.
That's so funny. We were watching a show on the TV about the animals that were left behind during Katrina.
Oh, yeah.
It was fascinating and very sad.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But my tie survived, I'm happy.
It did, your tie survived. Glenn Hansard, thanks a million, and I hope that the rest of the tour is as successful as the past has been, and that there are many more movies that you can maybe put music to, and aside from the music, that you can perform in, because your acting was something tremendous also.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, and I will tell you also that there are times when I need to relax, and it's the commitments is what's put on.
Yeah, good. It's a good film, man. I'm very proud of having been in it.
Yeah. Glenn Hansard, thank you very much indeed. Take care.
Thank you.